Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Shabbat, a day after we have celebrated Yom Kippurim and heading towards Sukkah. I would like, for no other reason perhaps than I don't want Terry, Kirk's wife, mad at me, since Kirk has piles of preparation material, and I said I would return to this story, that I would like to continue with an observation of what Yahweh had to say about the fulfillment of Yom Kippurim in your 6,000 Yah. Is that all right with you guys?
Certainly.
Absolutely.
Hi, Kirk. Hi. Hello. How are you?
Good.
Why don't we just jump right in and you guys add as we go along. Because it begins in Zechariah, which we remember, which means remember Yah, 12:9. And it's going to end with Yahweh telling us exactly how he is going to return and when he's going to return. It says, "And it will come about in that day that I will investigate and be judgmental of the Gentiles, the Goyim, destroying those who came against the Most High's Jerusalem." Didn't the Pope speak out against the Jewish occupation of Jerusalem and think that it should be the mythical people known as the Palestinians ought to occupy that place?
I'm sure he did.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a first-class scumbag. I mean, that's all that guy is. He's unbelievable.
Yeah, he is. He had this big speech about people's thirst for power and money is the root of all evil today in the Vatican.
Oh, he says that.
In the United Nations. And can you imagine a guy flies in his big jet, met by heads of state, goes and speaks to joint sessions of Congress, is hosted at the White House, and then speaks to the largest delegation in the history of the United Nations, and he's talking about people seeking power and influence.
Well, it does prove he did speak to the sick and the lame. It proves that much.
Yeah, that's it. There he is, the people's pope, after all. Anyway, the realization is that Yahweh is consistent. There's only one city on earth that means anything to him. Only one. And there's only one country on earth that means anything to him. There's only one people on earth that means anything to him. There's only one family on earth that means anything to him. He is really very focused as it relates to one nation, one family, one city, one way, one God, period. It's really very simple. You don't have to worry about what the alternatives have. And if you are in opposition to Jerusalem, as are most Gentiles, most Goyim, God himself is going to destroy you. Is that pretty clear?
Yeah, it's getting worse. And it's clear that they are, too. And by the way,
Does God here say that he is tolerant, or does he say he is judgmental?
Judgmental.
You know, it will come about in that day that I will investigate and be judgmental of some of or all. Right? Cool. All means all. That's all means. Of the Gentiles, destroying those who came against the Most High Jerusalem. Now, by the way, what this also means is that when Yahweh returns, not everybody on earth is going to be instantly vaporized.
No.
Those who are going to be instantly vaporized are those who came against Jerusalem. However, I don't think their souls will be. I just think their physical bodies will be.
Mm-hmm.
Because when he says, I'm going to investigate and be judgmental of, if God is judging you and he is investigating you and you have come against him, you're in a trial, you're in a whole world of hurt.
Yeah, you're already dead. It's a question of if you're going to be dead or alive, and alive is worse than dead.
That is correct. I think that I'm reading this, and I could be wrong, and it doesn't matter to me, but I'm reading this as if you came against Jerusalem, if you were opposed to Jerusalem during the 7 years of the tribulation, you're toast. That Yahweh will not bequeath you with the benefit of simply dying. He's going to judge you, and if he judges you, you're going to spend eternity in Sheol, separation. So this is an express ticket to hell. Then, but there isn't, Yahweh loves the place. He just hates the Gentiles. I mean, the audacity to claim that a Gentile church has replaced the promises of the Jews when you consider what he said through the prophet Yirmiyah, and there aren't many prophets after Yirmiyah. So, you know, at this point, this is Yahweh's last will and testimony. So, mm-hmm. if he hadn't replaced his chosen people at this time, he ain't never replaced them. And this is a condemnation of Goyim. God's going to judge them and destroy them. And yet, what is he going to do for his chosen people? And I will pour out on the household of Dod and on the inhabitants of Jerusalem, not on those coming against Jerusalem, on the inhabitants of Jerusalem, the spirit of acceptance who pleads for mercy. So, you know, we wonder how Israelites, Yehudim, are going to finally awaken in the last day and get their act together.
Mm-hmm.
Well, doesn't this explain it?
Yeah.
They only change because Yahweh enables it for them. You know, Kirk, I don't know how it was with you. Larry, I don't know how it was with you. I can tell you how it was with me. If it wasn't for the fact that Yahweh enabled my transition from Christianity to being an agnostic, to being open-minded, to questioning, to learning, to coming to know and understand what he is offering and embracing him and his covenant. If he did pour out on me a spirit of acceptance, I wouldn't be here.
I can believe that.
I don't think that I would have made this journey left to my own devices.
Well, you do have to accept what's true, and most people can't do it. So obviously, yes.
I was willing to accept what was true.
But you have your attitude.
Right.
My attitude
was fine. You know, I mean that wasn't.
So I mean, he'll help you if your attitude's right.
Yeah, I mean, I think what he's doing with the inhabitants of Jerusalem is at this point, I think they've had an attitude adjustment, and he's going to explain the attitude adjustment as we go through this. They've had an attitude adjustment. I had an attitude adjustment. I went through a very difficult period. I had an attitude adjustment, and I was open to it, but I am convinced that a spirit of acceptance is what enabled me to at least be open-minded to all of this and to embrace it. And I think he's doing exactly the same thing. For
now, when you say acceptance, you mean acceptance of the truth is what you mean.
Of course.
Like a willingness to let go of a lie. And,
yeah, but, you know, that might sound easy. It might sound, of course. You know, what idiot wouldn't accept the truth and let go of a lie?
No,
that's a lot of idiots.
And I'm sure you're not diminishing that. That may be the hardest thing that a person can do in their whole life. I mean, second only maybe to presiding over the death of premature death of someone you love. I can't imagine a more difficult thing than admitting that everything that you've believed, everything that has shaped your life, is wrong.
We call that manning up. You got to man up and admit you've been lied to, and accept the fact you've been lied to, and that's where it is. I mean, come on. That's everybody's got to do it. Some people need a brick to fall on their head. Some house. In the case of the family in Jerusalem, they need a whole city.
Yeah. And I think here in the case of you know, I can speak for myself. I've sensed, even though this speaks of the household of Dod, and you know, I'm not a member of the household of Dod. I'm not a descendant of Yehudah. And Yehudah is specifically the household of Dod. It's not all Yisrael, but it's Yehudah. And he's saying here for Yehudah that he's pouring out the spirit of acceptance, because Yehudah and Yisrael both are reconciled into the relationship upon his return. But particularly now, Yehudah is kind of a big break. Yahweh is opening their minds, opening their eyes, opening their ears, opening their hearts. They are now receptive to the truth, and it's still their responsibility to act upon it, to embrace it.
Yeah, but right in Hosea, there when he talks about the crescent moon invading the land, right?
Yes.
Right after that, he says, He says, and then there's going to be those, you know, and we will say, and he's talking about Yehudim, and we will say, let's go back to Yahweh. You know, I mean, this is, I mean, I really never looked at this as such an astounding piece, but passage.
Mm-hmm.
But it is absolutely astounding because people, when left with no other way out, I mean, they have no other way out at this point.
Correct. They are surrounded. Abandoned by the world.
Well, I got an idea. Let's go back to Yahweh. And that only proves, by the way, that the foreshadowing was the foreshadowing event when the king, as you say, dusted off the Torah and found a few lowy.
There
it is. That was his option, too.
Right. But I want you to know how hard that is, because that means admitting that all of those who have gone before you, your parents, those you've loved, your ancestors, those that have already died during this tribulation, that means you have to acknowledge that their souls no longer exist. And at worst, their souls are destined to Sheol. That means that all those people you trusted lied to you. And the people that you thought were your allies and your friends and your supporters were actually your foes. I mean, that is a tough pill to swallow.
Now, once you swallowed it,
I mean, from our perspective looking back, the kind of rhetoric we're engaged in right now,
mm-hmm.
is difficult even. It's hard for me to process that it was once difficult for me. Because once you're on this side of the divide, you know, everything is roses. Everything is rainbows. You know, everything is sunshine and light. It's all beautiful songs. It is everything wonderful on this side of the divide. But when you're first making that step over, man, it's tough. That's
it stops what a lot
right
of people.
Now.
It stops a lot of people. But it also shows us here, when he's saying the spirit of acceptance, I'm going to pour this out on them. In other words, they're getting a strong dose of reality. You know, it's reality
right.
that wakes you up.
Right. So, they will look upon me, whom by association they pierced, mourning as one wails for an only begotten son, grieving bitterly over him as one suffers an anguish over a firstborn. Now, the first part of this is a great celebration. It's always been a celebration for us. We recognize that Yahshua was pierced in accordance with Psalm 22 and Psalm 88, specifically on our behalf, that he was pierced exactly as it's laid out in Yahshua, where they pierced my hands and feet. That he was pierced on our behalf as a sacrificial lamb, standing up for us so we could stand with him. We all know that. The second part of this was extraordinarily difficult to me. Why would you mourn? Why would you cry over this occurrence when it is this joyous reconciliation? You are now, for the first time, not only in the presence of, he is welcoming you.
Well, so because you realize what you did. I mean, that's the problem. You realize...
Yeah.
And it's not so much what they did, the people standing there, but whom by association, and whom by association of their religion, who denied it all this time. I mean, yeah, sure, everybody behind them's a liar. You just said it. I mean, that's it.
I think what he's conveying here is the exact same reaction that I had. My initial reaction was I was angry. I was angry at myself, disappointed in myself for having been so easily fooled for so long. I was disappointed in myself for having misled people. I was PO'd that people I trusted, that said they were looking out for my interest, had lied to me, and they knew they had lied. And I was really angry that so many people had squandered their souls because of institutionalized religious lies. And so when you first make this transition, this is your reaction. It was my reaction. It's a genuine reaction. I think what he's telling us here is that these Yehudim who turn to him and embrace him and accept him at this very last minute are going to feel all of these same emotions that most of us have gone through. I don't know. I can't say that all of us have gone through it. Like J.B., for example. I don't think he went through these. You know, J.B.'s had a recent crash and fall and been broken into pieces. I understand his recovery. But he was an agnostic, so he didn't have the anger, the frustration, the emotional upheaval of having to deal with the fact that that those you'd invested so much time with had deliberately lied to you.
Well, you feel violated.
Right, here I was.
Well, I never did either because nobody pushed any of this at me. I grew up in basically an atheist household.
Yeah.
And I
But politically, let's look at it politically. I know that, that I used to have a home right on the Pacific Ocean. And one of the times I was in Pearl Harbor, I was patriotic, and I picked up one of those flags that had been flown over the USS Arizona. And I brought it back, and I had right there in the center of my driveway, right there in the front of my home, this big, huge flagpole with an American flag on it. Man, I was patriotic. Well, you know, I believe that our military was providing our freedom, you know, making us free. I played for a fool.
Mm-hmm.
A bunch of
me wrong. Just several months ago, I had a good friend die. He was an explosive ordnance disposal on our unit, and his name was Randy, and he owned hectares of fish ponds over in the Philippines. That's what he was doing now. And I always called him Hardcore Gore. But he called me several months before he died, and he says, you know, we should really get together one more time. And I didn't really think about it. He didn't tell me he was sick. I didn't know. But, you know, I shared Yah's words with him, and Randy goes, well, you know, I guess I'm just, you know, your standard run-of-the-mill Catholic.
Oh. Wow. Makes you mad, doesn't it? That jerk robbed your good friend of his soul.
Yep.
So, you know, this is a profound prophecy. It was given 500 years before they pierced Yosha on the upright pole, and 2,500 years before the children of Israel, particularly Yahudah, will look up to Yahweh. And this is Yahweh speaking in first person, so it's not a diminished manifestation that is returning. This is Yahweh returning. They're going to look at me, whom they pierced. So in the day, that day, that specific day, he will be great. And the shouts in Jerusalem will be like the wailing of Hadad-Rimmon in the valley of Megiddo. Well, this is really interesting. He's talking about the wailing of Hadad-Rimmon. So who is wailing? Is Yahudah wailing? Is Yisrael wailing? Are the inhabitants of Jerusalem wailing?
You're talking about the anti-Messiah. You're talking about the man of no Torah.
That's right.
That's who's doing the wailing.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Well, it's Edenite or Ebonite god also, and it's the Ishmael's son.
Right.
And this was named Hadad, and he was a Babylonian, so we're not talking about the children of Israel.
Yeah, what did Yahweh say about Esau, who went off and married one of Ishmael's daughters?
He said, I hate him.
Yeah,
I hate him. I hate him in the womb.
Oh, by the way, you guys, I have to bring this one up. I have to bring this one up.
Okay.
There was a YouTube put out, you know, of course, we were laughing at it. In Unpopular Truth this week. And guess what it was? It was this young white kid talking about how people don't realize all the blacks are the true Israelites. I am an Edomite. Look at this. He had red hair, you know. And I thought, well, the idiot doesn't realize that apparently Esau and Jacob were twins. You know, we're not talking about cats breeding here. That means they had the same mom and the same dad, idiot.
Yeah. Born
it's just amazing what religion does to stand people on its heads. It's amazing. I had to throw that in.
It's the ultimate institution to preclude rational thinking.
Absolutely.
It is. It's absolutely adverse to evidence and completely detrimental to the concept of rational thought. Now, this is an interesting comment. It was also difficult to deal with until you really come to know how divisive Yahweh's message is. He says, the world's people and nations, this is Mizpah, races and kingdoms. He's talking about all of those that have no relationship to Yisrael or Yahudah, shall mourn. families by themselves, the house of Dod by themselves, and families of the house of Nathan by itself, and their wives by themselves, and it goes on. So why is it that A, the Gentile nations are all mourning, and B, why is it that that the household of Dod, the household of Nathan, which means gift, Dod means love, are by themselves?
Is it because it's a personal decision?
Yes, because the world has been divided at this point. There is no crossing over the lines anymore. You know, if you're outside, estranged from the family, you are forever outside, estranged from the family. There is no possibility of being united. And at this point, Yahweh is returning to the concept of the original 12 tribes. And so he is resettling the descendants of Nathan in one spot, the descendants of Dod in another. He is returning to exactly what he designed. You know, he laid out the territories they would all occupy.
Right.
He did so for a reason. He's returning to that. So he's separating not only the world from Israel, but he's separating the 12 tribes because each has their own role, their own destiny, their own proclivity. And we're all unique in these. That's what he's doing. So that's what's happening in the world.
He's reordering. Okay.
But he's not reordering on a new plan.
No, just the old tribes.
He's
marched out of Egypt the same way.
Reestablishing, restoring. How about the Kadosh?
Okay.
Go ahead.
But I'm assuming that the world's people and nations that are not of the house of Nathan or Dod, which of course that would be Yehuda, I guess these are people that stayed, I don't know, they made it through the tribulation and they're really on Yahweh's side? I'm not sure here.
Yeah, it's not specified here, but the very fact that they're mourning, and they're not mourning as for a firstborn. And they're not mourning as looking up to God. They're just
no. They could be crying for themselves.
So what I think
people they lost.
And again, we're not told specifically, and it doesn't matter from us. But we're just curious. What I think he's telling us here is that those who came against Israel, and there'll be a couple hundred million people that are have come specifically against Israel. Those who
die
are being judged. Whether they came against Israel and physically present there, or they just plotted against Israel, like the Abominator, or the Pope. Whether they're there in person or too weaselly to be there in person, they just schemed against Israel. They're going to be judged. They're going to be destroyed. That was a big screw-up. All right? Now, these other people did come against Israel, and so they're probably in that that vast cadre of people who are not going to be judged, but their days are now numbered. And, you know, there's 5 days that Yahweh is going to clean house. And, you know, they're among those who are going to cease to exist, but there's not going to be any pain. It's just they're only, in this case, they're mourning over squandered possibilities.
Yeah,
lost opportunity.
Well, he says right near my he says, you know, oh, you Gentiles, you'll come from all over the world or say, surely everything that that our forefathers taught us was a lie.
Right.
You know,
a lie.
Wasteful.
And
he says, you're going to know Yahweh's my name, by the way, in that, you know.
I don't think Yahweh is suggesting here that they're going to populate the millennial Shabbat. I don't think he's suggesting here that he's going to give them a second chance. I don't think he's suggesting that they're going to be part of his family forever. I don't think any of that would be consistent with his character. But I do think it would be consistent and wholly appropriate for him to say, you know, I got 5 days here. You weren't overtly against me. You didn't oppose me. You simply were beguiled. You squandered your soul. You know, during these 5 days, I'm going to give you the opportunity to see what you missed. Not going to torment you, not going to judge you, not going to hurt you in any way, But during these 5 days, I'm going to give you the opportunity to see what you missed.
Oh, that's pretty rough.
I think that's fair. I think that's, wouldn't you?
It may well be fair.
I mean, you've got 5 days to, 5 days longer than you're going to otherwise have, because, you know, at the end of the 5 days, your soul simply ceases to exist. There'll be no memory of it, no pain of it, no judgment, no punishment. But at least you're given the opportunity to see what you could have had.
Yeah, because they do seem to be making, excuses, giving alibis. Surely our forefathers, everything they taught us was a lie.
This is not the crowd that's saying, Lord, Lord, right?
No.
The poor, just the poor, they just got drug along with it.
The Lord people are at the white throne.
Is there a possibility that Yahweh will say those who were just beguiled, they weren't academicians, so they weren't promoting lies. They weren't super religious, so they weren't promoting religious lies. They weren't political, so they weren't advocating political lies. They weren't in the military off killing people or destroying things. They weren't in the media misleading people. They were just ordinary saps that really never made a conscious decision. They were misled, given bad information. Is there the possibility that he could take whatever number of people that there are like that and say, you know, some of these people exposed to the truth might be worth enjoying, might be worth including in eternity if they, now exposed to the truth, accept it? Yes, possibility.
To be honest with you, when I read that, I thought that's what it meant. In fact, I fall down on that side now. They might have not been, from the house of Nathan or Dode, but I think that they were probably people that didn't agree with their own governments.
I think so.
And I think that they're I don't think they're being given 5 days. I think they're actually being grafted in. That's my thought. But it's just my
I don't know if they if they are or if they're given that possibility. But I'm certainly open to providing them.
Well, he's certainly making the statement about them in the same passage he is about Dode and Nathan. So I think that there are some, and it doesn't mean a vast preponderance of people either.
This could read the world's people. Shall mourn, period.
Yeah, sure.
Could be, period. The world's people will mourn. Okay, period. Then the next statement could be that the house of Dode will be by themselves and the families of Nathan by itself.
Right.
And thus their wives by themselves. So it does not necessitate a connection between Dode and the mourning of the nations. It depends on how you read it and where you put the punctuation here as to whether or not that is the case. But, Yahweh cut all of us a break.
Yeah.
He saw somewhere in our lives that one day we were going to embrace the truth. And because of that, there were times where we were aided and abetted along the way, because he knew while we were estranged from him at the time, he knew we were going to be part of his family. I was too. And so, could he be doing the same thing for these folks?
I think that's kind of what's going on there, but I'm not sure. I wouldn't bet my soul on it, however. Well, it doesn't. I'm not betting my soul on anything, but his words.
Other than the path. But I think it's a possibility.
Well, I just don't see what nature is saying as I'm giving you 5 days to ponder this before I do away with you. I don't think that. I really don't. I think his nature is more, these people, they were decent people. I'm giving a shot because the truth is they were on my team. He doesn't say that the world's peoples and nations were against him. You know, there's plenty of people that live in nations, like us as an example. of course, we've found the path, but let's just say these people were
at least patriotic. They're not religious.
Yeah, they were at least against their government.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's plenty of people that realize that their governments are criminal.
Right.
Criminal.
So it could be those people. I do not think that Yahweh could be specific here, nor do I think it's appropriate for us to suggest that this opportunity actually exists. It's, we're fine speculating so long as we say, don't bet your soul on it.
Yeah, well, I can't say one way. I just
right.
I can say
because if Yahweh said I'm going to give a certain group of people a this opportunity when I'm physically present on Earth, then it would give people an excuse to say, well, then you know I'll wait to that day.
Yeah. Well, I think that kind of person isn't going to make it to begin with.
I would agree with you. Yeah. It's not like Yahweh to carve out exceptions.
No, I know that, but let's say that there's a Yehuda somewhere out there in the world that needed help to get through that 7 years, and this person came and helped. I think that person would then be, they would count,
Then he goes on to say, I will pour out upon the household of Dod and on the inhabitants of Jerusalem the spirit of acceptance, who pleads for favor. On that day there shall be opened for the household of Dod and the inhabitants of Jerusalem concerning the offer to purify and cleanse sin and corruption. So when this is Zechariah 13:1, there's going to be a moment where Yahweh is going to say, all right, I'm going to pour out the spirit of acceptance and favor. And it's a source for opening people's minds, particularly for the household of Dod and the inhabitants of Jerusalem. This opportunity for you, if you're willing to accept it, embrace it, the means to be cleansed of your sin, to find redemption, and to be rid of corruption.
Let me ask a quick question.
Mm-hmm.
Terry asked, the story about the vineyard, and at the last minute they come in and they get paid the same price that everybody was there all day?
Right. Uh-huh. Yeah.
I was thinking, we have that guy on the cross, the guy being crucified right next to him.
The first one.
Yeah.
The first one. I'm with her on. I think it is a foreshadowing of this very moment.
Okay.
I don't think the story of the two criminals on the cross on this day, you're going to be with me in prayer. There isn't a prayer in the world that that's possible because he wasn't in heaven on that day, and he doesn't use the term paradise.
Yeah. Well, that's that New Testament.
Another
I don't know which one.
Yeah.
Because
that day he was not there, so he could not.
Yeah, that would have made him a liar. You're right.
First connection she made about the worker who comes into the vineyard late getting the same reward as the one that's been there all the time. He could well be speaking of those who have come at the 12th hour.
Yeah.
So under that case, he's reinforcing something that is important. That's not the way I would choose, knowing what we know, to be part of the millennial Shabbat.
Yeah.
I'd rather come in the front door than have a window open up at the 11th hour should I happen to survive it.
Yeah, that's not desirable.
No, and how would you like to get learning and growing and fellowship and sharing and enlightenment that we're enjoying now? Why would you want to postpone that for the next 18 years?
Not a good plan. I'm just saying maybe
I think she's right. Bottom line is I think she's right. Okay. In fact, I'm convinced she's right. And it shall exist on that day, declares Yahweh, of the assembled conscripts, the Shaba, the command and control regimen. The names of the idols made of the substance of the earth shall be cut off and destroyed. Recalled and proclaimed no longer. Moreover, I will quickly distance and destroy from the world prophets and the intoxicating spirit of uncleanliness and infidelity. Well, you know,
bad news for religious leaders.
Yeah,
we're all
good.
You know, there are times watch them on TV.
Yeah, well, there are times where I'm sure that I sound a little shrill, that I don't have a smile in my voice when I expose and condemn religion. But I don't sense a smile in Yahweh's tone here.
No.
I think he is, however, delighted to get rid of it. And if you are religious, you know, you're around that monkey that's parading in his Pope mobile with all of his religious symbols, then you need to know that the God that created the universe despises him and does not know you. And the moment that he returns, all vestiges of Roman Catholicism and all of their idols, all of their graven images, all of their churches and basilicas will just be destroyed. And all of their lords and Jesuses and Hail Marys will never be heard again. It's over. Instantly. There'll be no Holy Ghost. It's gone. Never to be heard of again. So, you don't want at this moment to be standing on a religious site. You don't want to be in the Vatican at this very moment. I'll tell you that for darn sure. You don't want to be in a church at this moment. You don't want to be in a mosque. God's going to destroy them. Now, I was at one time, and Roy sent me a letter talking about a passage where the prophets are, you know, do not live forever, and your fathers are dead. And he acknowledged that it's possible to be a prophet in the sense of a false prophet. And Yahweh uses Elohim to speak of false gods, just as he uses Nambi to speak of false prophets. The overwhelming preponderance of those who claim to speak for God are false prophets. The overwhelming preponderance of them. And I think I'm on solid ground to say that there has not been a prophet speak for Yahweh in the past 2,500 years. Now that the only possible exclusion from that could be Yahweh Conan. No, I'm excluding Yahusha because Yahusha is not a separate entity from Yahweh. Right. But Yahweh Conan wrote down what he heard and saw, and some of the way that he conveys that is similar to the way that the Hebrew prophets did in prior years. So with the exception of Yahweh Conan, depending on how you view Revelation, whether or not it's just Yahusha's words being conveyed through Yahweh Conan or Yahweh Conan actually explaining the future. The only exception would be Yahweh Conan. So that means that for the past 1950 years, there hasn't been a single prophet that has actually worked on behalf of Yahweh. And think of the number
of people. And Yahweh doesn't ever say there will be. And so you get the two in Revelation.
Yeah, the two at the end. Yeah.
You know, which is Enoch and Eliah. And we know Eliah's got some work to do, so that makes total sense with Revelation.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I do think Revelation is. And by the way, as you guys know, that was the one book they even considered not putting in because they couldn't make heads or tails of it. And they said, we'll just throw it in anyway in the end. But
it kind of told on them,
you know.
Right. Yeah, when I look at Revelation, I think that there is that if you consider it only in light of what we're told in Zechariah and Malachi and Ezekiel and Daniel, if you view everything you read from the perspective of those books, particularly Daniel, then it is a nice added perspective that helps you better understand what is being created.
Zachariah.
But apart from being another way, a bright, brilliant light on those prophets to help us pull the pieces together and see how they fit together, that's really all it's for.
Well, you got the asteroid that they just found, right?
Yes.
That confirms the Yobel count to me. That's a very strong indication of the Yobel. And then you've got the one world government, which lines up completely with Daniel again.
Uh-huh.
And again with what Zachariah is saying here in the end. And
right.
So
I think
it's...
But that one world government, too, you've got to have a vestige of Rome that tramples on the whole world. And so the Roman Catholic Church had to align itself both with Islam and with socialist secular humanism, because Roman Catholicism is dying.
Well,
so
I think the Pope has done that in the last year. He went into a mosque here recently, based Mecca, and did a prayer. That's not alignment. I don't know what is.
He was at a religious ceremony where all the little clowns got up front, every single one of them, both men and women, dressed up in their religious costumes. And, you know, so they had this whole ecumenical thing of sheikhs and Buddhist monks and Hindus and... Muslims and, this was Babylon.
Did the Dalai Lama show up too?
I think it was the whole host.
Well, I hope Oprah Winfrey didn't miss it. I mean, she needed to be there too, along with the Mormon guy that loves all religions, that did his little prayer service up there in D.C. a while back.
Oh, I'm sure that Rich Warren was there, the Chrislam inventor.
Yeah, they needed him as well. There was a radio commentator or TV commentator for Fox that started.
And by the way, all of these religious leaders all were galvanized around the Pope. He was the unifier.
They were all kissing his ring back.
But that is really important because
it is this
incarnation of Rome that treads upon the whole world in the end and the last days, that becomes the Whore of Babylon. And so it is, and the Roman Catholic Church is dying. I mean, it's lost 40% of its members in appeal in America over the last decade.
How many of them did they molest?
Right.
It's dying around the world.
It's essentially dead in Europe. I mean, it's dying off rapidly in the Americas. Roman Catholicism is on its deathbed. And so what did they do? They brought about a communist pope to appeal to the enlightened individual order that has embraced Islam.
Sure.
There you have it. That's exactly what we're witnessing. So, and it shall come on that day, declares Yahweh, of the assembled conscripts, that the idols made of the substance of the earth, the names of the idols. So it's Yahweh is more interested in the names of the idols than he is just in the idols. Mary, all the statues to Mary, all of the references to Allah, all of the references to the Lord, all the references to Jesus and to Christ and to Shiva.
All the little saints. They make little saints too. Even people that are in the sex trade and in the drug business, you know, they got saints for those things. You know that, right?
And God didn't say that he is going to accommodate them. He says they will be cut off and proclaimed and remembered no longer. We will never hear them ever spoken of again. Moreover, I will quickly distance and destroy from the world prophets of the intoxicating spirit of uncleanliness and infidelity. Remember how many times we saw intoxicating in Yashmiah and speaking of Ephraim, and it was always intoxicating. And then in Chabaouk, Paul was called intoxicating. And then in Hosea, you know, it's intoxicating. In Yashmiah, it's intoxicating. Well, here he's telling you, it's the intoxicating spirit of infidelity. Talking about Satan and his demons. That's the spirit. He's not talking about alcohol.
No.
He's using alcohol and the intoxicating nature of alcohol as a metaphor.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like when he's talking about food. He's using food as a metaphor. He's talking about bread and grain. He's using bread and grain as a metaphor. When he talks about a rock, he's using the rock as a metaphor. When he talks about light, light is a metaphor. And he uses very symbolic language so that we of puny little minds might understand and visualize, appreciate these great concepts. But drawn as a as an artist would draw a picture for a child to help a child understand.
But, you know, when he uses a word like tama, where he's saying, you know, uncleanness and infidelity and whoring, I mean, that's what he's saying. I mean, these are people that are abusing the rest of the world with lies, you know.
Yeah. Infidelity, person says infidelity, what does that mean to you? Adultery.
Well, when they say
infidelity is adultery, right?
The one you love.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, but I don't think of it.
You're being unfaithful. You're being unfaithful.
Unfaithful. Yeah.
That is what it means. So the covenant is a marriage vow.
Mm-hmm.
And so what Yahweh is saying is those that are opposed to my covenant, those that are opposed who have welched on the marriage vow, that those people who are now having an adulterous affair with unclean spirits. Those are the ones that are in that he's going to completely obliterate from the earth.
Yeah, the whore of Babylon.
The whore of Babylon. So if you are a pope or a bishop or a cardinal or a priest or an
Rick Warren.
Rick Warren. You know, you're in serious trouble right here.
Yep.
I mean, you're gone. Toast. God hates you. Good riddance. I mean, this is, you know, it's like the 717 that were trampled to death at Mecca. You know, if you feel compassion for them, there's something wrong with you.
No, I agree.
You know,
who
you're
cares?
Stupid enough to circle around a rock pile to rock gods and thinking you're throwing pebbles at the devil. That throwing a pebble at a spiritual being is a prudent thing to do.
You and IQ were very good today on the rock pile.
Oh, gosh.
That was funny. I mean,
drawing rocks.
Oh, yeah.
How stupid. Well, they were burning them in hell, you know.
Your God is a rock god. You're ambulating
a
rock pile to rock gods, and then you're throwing rocks at the devil? I mean, come on. Think it through, people. It's no loss. And God's going to just obliterate it. And the only way for there to be a wonderful experience like Eden with Yahweh on earth for 1,000 years is for all of these religious numbskulls to be obliterated. Good riddance. Goodbye. Nice not knowing you.
Well, how many people do they get killed? I mean, honestly. And I don't even mean just spiritually. I mean both ways. You know, not only do these people get wiped out spiritually that follows them, and I find it really wild. I mean, it's just another confirmation of Yahweh's words when people embrace what kills them.
Yeah.
You know,
they love
Jesus.
Because of the intoxicating spirit. That's the reason it's always intoxicating.
It's always bad
judgment. They're intoxicated. They're poisoned into believing this. They're brainwashed into believing it. Their judgment is destroyed. That's the whole concept of religious faith.
Yeah, but don't you have to ask yourself? Don't you have to ask yourself? And I want you guys to think about this.
Yeah.
How did they get people to this? I mean, even people that were raised in atheist households like myself who once fell for this trash. Well, they marched you off to school. They had you talk to a Roman flag. And it was a Roman flag. Make no bones about that.
Right. And a government with a Senate based on Rome. With buildings that were based on the whole Roman concept that claimed representative government came out of Rome. And Rome wasn't even Rome during the period they were a republic. They weren't a republic.
No, there was just a bunch of rich guys.
A cast of super rich guys that lorded over the rest of the Roman citizens, who then enslaved and butchered and tormented the rest of the world. They the robber baron cult. I mean, come on, why would you emulate any of that? Indeed, it shall come to pass that anyone who speaks as a prophet again, his father and mother will say to the child they abhor, you shall not live, for indeed you speak lies in the name of Yahweh. And his father and mother who bore him shall pierce him when he prophesies.
Well, there's an attitude change.
Whoa! That means that the whole world will view that lies about God, religion,
or just
is the single most hurtful and deadly and destructive things that you could possibly do.
But think about how the world comes to that. Wow! Almost the entire world gets killed in this last 3.5 years. It's just astounding. That's
what
you know
that means.
That.
But that's what something that's very, very important here. What that means is that A, there will be free will during the millennial Shabbat.
Yeah,
there will
absolutely.
Still be the opportunity to rebel. That also means that children will be born during the Shabbat. That also means that the children born during the Shabbat are going to have the same opportunity that Adam and Chawa had. Adam and Chawa lived in a condition identical to the Shabbat. You know, Cain and Abel were born into a condition that was very similar to this as well. And when those children have to have the same opportunity to rebel, the only difference is going to be that for eternity, that 1,000 years to be peaceful, tranquil, enjoyable, there has to be a zero tolerance for religious lies. And so you'll have the choice, but zero tolerance. Even your own parents will recognize now you're a blight on the planet.
You got to have choice.
There won't be any question what the Torah says on any matter at that period. So.
No, but isn't that also that's also the reason that he unlooses
so you have a choice.
Right. This is reaffirming that you have a choice. And by the way, that could also tie in, and I don't want to make a big deal about this because while I think Terry is right, I want to be really careful that I'm not offering people false hope. But this could also be for those who were not religious, who were not political, who were not military, who didn't harbor any animosity towards Yahweh's chosen people or his city or God himself. He could allow them into the millennial Shabbat up to the point that they themselves are given the opportunity to choose. But if they choose to oppose him, it's over.
Well, look, at the end of
them.
At the end of Zechariah, at the end of this presentation of the fulfillment of Kippurim, there is a group allowed in that, you know, had to march with their governments that was with Allah. It says so right there. And he invites them in for Sukkah, so there can be no question about that. I mean, it's what it says. I mean, sure. You know, there are options for a few people. But it does say the remnant, you know, it isn't some vast majority or a preponderance of people or anything like that.
A tiny remnant, and those people will have foregone what we enjoy. Now, I personally think that while I'm looking forward to eternity and being empowered and being further enriched and all of that sort of thing, I think that these days that we're living now, you know, I've gone from one that says, you know, I don't care if they end my time here, you know, sooner rather than later. It doesn't much matter to me one way or the other because eternity is going to be a lot better. I'm enjoying this.
Yeah.
I love it.
Well,
you like to
expose it. You're a trumpet. You and
Kirk, I love it.
Trumpets
right.
every day. You know, there's trumpets in this chat room. I mean, that's what we do.
Right. That's what we do.
So,
that's what we love.
That's the most enjoyable part of my life.
I like to talk about it. If we didn't do anything, we'd just talk about it.
I was thinking today, you know, as I said, you know, I'm going to go into this material because, first of all, I'm interested in it. And, I, you know, you do a program like this. I know Larry, you quote from it all the time. You were interested in it. I know that, Kirk, you prepared mm-hmm. on this material, and I happen to love this material. But I was kidding and saying, you know, if I didn't stick to this material since you had done all the preparation, and Terry had written me last week and saying, you know, what are you going to talk about? So, you know, because you're spending more time preparing than you are the art. And I was going to say, yeah, you know, if I'm not supportive, Terry might not let you play with me anymore on the. We really are. We're playing. We're having fun on the.
You mean he's got you off?
Yeah, but then I was just laughing and saying, you know, you love it. You don't do it because for any other reason than
I hear laughing downstairs.
Yeah, you love it. You eat it up.
It is fun.
You can tell it's fun.
Well, you know, it was funny. This is the first time we've had a member of the covenant actually join us during these feast days. I mean, for years with nobody. You know, even the ones we talked to, they were so close, and they just don't know. I don't want any part of this. And Lord, so what a week! I mean, besides the horror of all this stuff on TV, and I mean, it just sickens me.
But the beauty of it today. Talk about the God of tomorrow.
I can't.
You hear IQ though today? Talk about the God of tomorrow.
I know. He's really.
He was sitting there talking about, you know, this Allah bears no resemblance to the God of the Torah who doesn't want to be worshipped, who doesn't want you bowing down to him.
I got to love that.
Oh,
I got to love it.
He went on and on about the correctly saying things about Yahweh, calling him by name, Yahweh.
You must be reading.
The Torah wants none of this rubbish.
You know, I found something with you, Yada. It seems you spend time with these people and you start rubbing off on them.
Well, you know, like I had this guy, and I sent you an email on this guy that wrote a letter, and it was kind of like one of those testy letters. How could you speak favorably of Yosha when you're condemning the New Testament, and I thought he was really setting me up, and I went through my normal thing, and I went through it on the show today, so I don't want to repeat it here. But as it turns out, this fellow had stumbled onto one of the programs, probably on Richard's site, but on somebody's site, was listening to them and said, "Oh, wow, this is really interesting. I think I'll test him with this question." But you know, he was already
back agreeing with you. Is that that fellow?
Yeah. And so the thing that he says, I was listening to your teachings, and this is important in terms of rubbing off, is that what I told him is, my hope is that I don't have any teachings. You know, my hope is that all I'm doing is accurately reflecting Yahweh's teaching. If that's the case, then this is all good. But understand, I don't have any teaching. I don't want to have any teaching. I don't aspire to have any teaching. But I'm delighted to spend time talking about Yahweh's teaching, because it has merit. So that's where we are. And my view is that if you share Yahweh's teaching with reasonable, open-minded, rational people, it's going to rub off. It's that spirit of acceptance that so long as your mind and eyes and ears are open, what Yahweh says resonates. He doesn't have to be sold.
No.
Not in the money business, so we're not in the selling business. There's nothing that we do here that could, elicit money from anybody. In fact, it's in that regard, it's a net loss. Okay.
Right.
So, I'm not going to say that. I think there's certain blessings. I actually do believe that. But
I do so.
But other than that, I mean, it's not like we have to sit here and kowtow and then try to compromise. Once you get into money and stuff, that's what you're doing. I mean, you don't have a straight show anymore. There is one question I wanted to ask here, and this is, it still deals with Kippurim, however, because I had a religious dolt when I told them that, no, this is a feast. You can't have a feast while you're fasting. It's just not the way it works. Sent me over something from Yasha Yah talking about a fast. Does anybody know which one that is? I think it was like in 58 or something. I was looking for the chapter she sent over, but something about a fast that you aren't keeping or something.
Oh, well, I'm sure there is a fast that I'm not keeping because I'm not aware of any fast. There are a couple of references where there is a fast referenced, but it's not an invitation from Yahweh. It's not a mikra from Yahweh. And so if there is a, and it's not in the Torah. So if there is, and I think there is, I think there's a reference someplace in one of the prophets.
It's in Yashaya somewhere.
Yeah, to fasting. I will tell you that, I mean, this much I know for absolute certainty. Yahweh told us everything we needed to know about how to transition from our mortal flawed state to being perfect, enlightened, enriched souls camping out with Him for all time. He told us exactly how to engage and to benefit from the covenant. He provided us with 100% of the guidance that we needed in His Torah. If it isn't in His Torah, we don't need it. Now, if that means that there is something else that Yahweh has referenced all the way in Yashaya, 7 centuries after the Torah was given to us, that He's referencing something that people were doing, then okay, enjoy it. But if you want to do it, that's up to you. I can tell you for certain, it is not a salvation or a relationship item with Yahweh. He does not introduce things 700 years after He provided the full set of instructions.
So I have it.
That's my response. You can have it if you want.
Anyway, it's Yashaya, 58:3-5.
Okay.
Is that what it is?
Uh-huh.
I was trying to go from memory. You know, what did she say about what was being said there?
Well, all I have is the old King James type of stuff, you know. So it's wherefore have ye fasted so that they that speak of thee, wherefore have we afflicted our souls, and they'll take us no knowledge, and on and on and on.
Is that how that
is? So individuals asking questions, or Yahweh asking questions of the individuals? It sounds like individuals are asking questions.
Yeah.
They're searching.
Yeah,
so these are individuals that are searching. So. Cry
aloud and spare not, lift up the voice like a trumpet, and show my people their transgressions in the house of Jacob. Their sins, and I'd have to break it. I'd have to get all.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like God is telling them why. You know, why didn't you fast?
No.
But I say, listen, if it trips your trigger and you want to fast, you just go right ahead.
Yeah.
I know that the 7 Moed Mikrei are chalked.
But not fast.
Yeah, and Yahweh never uses the word fast in association with his Moed Mikrei. He uses chalked, which is a festival feast. And I'm going to go to the feast, but, you know, I like good food. That's my predilection. On that day, everyone who claims to speak on behalf of a god will be too ashamed to provide their message or their destructive spiritual visions. They will be too ashamed to deceive while dressed in their fine rich robes and fine cloaks, their garments of magnificent splendor. Boy, every time I saw that pope... fancy robes, and then all the cardinals and archbishops and the like around him with their fancy robes. Oh, God, it just gives me the creeps. And then you saw that ecumenical thing with everybody in their religious garb pretending to be godly. And if you're wearing a religious outfit at this time,
you're in trouble.
You're in trouble.
Big trouble. Yeah. Religious dress up. Let's play religious dress up. And we therefore
so
we look
when
like
Yahweh returns, everyone who claims to speak on behalf of a god's going to be ashamed. They're not going to give their destructive spiritual visions anymore. They're going to be too ashamed to deceive while dressed in their religious outfits. So he will say, I am not a divine messenger or prophet. I am an individual who serves the realm of mankind. But indeed, from his youth, he has made merchandise of mankind. It's like the Pope talking about, the scum of the earth. They've raped the earth because their God is money. When the Roman Catholic Church has made merchandise of men.
You know, he gets to tell He gets a salary of $20 million a year. At least that was what Pope John got, so I assume.
Really? $20 million?
$20 million a year was Pope John's
benefits as long as a train, huh? All the little boys you can have. Unbelievable. $20 million on top of that. I don't even think I need money.
I don't know. He doesn't have any for clothing allowance.
If they were paid for nothing, it doesn't matter. If they were paid for nothing, it doesn't matter.
It's just surprising. I mean, that they openly admit that. Yeah,
they made merchandise of men. So that's why they do it. They do it for a buck. And all the religious leaders do. They, you know, when I confronted the most famous of the Protestant pastors, you know, when I told him the truth, and he said, "Yeah, what you're saying is true. Therefore, what I'm saying is a lie. But if I were to proclaim the truth and not continue to promote the lie of Christianity, be no checks in the mail."
Yeah, and you'd be called a kook.
Yeah,
you just didn't confront him. You confronted him for, 4 or 5 hours all afternoon, didn't you?
Yeah, 4 or 5 hours.
How did he face you after saying that?
Oh, we never again met.
I know you walked away, but I mean, it's just, I mean, why would he even admit that thing?
I know you, Craig, and I know you're right. Wow.
I know you're right.
You were sitting there falling out of your chair when he said, "But tough, right?" Because you had a chance with this guy.
No, I didn't. But when he admitted, he said, "Listen, everything you've said is true." So did his the top academic at his university, his principal, not only Hebrew scholar, but the senior academic dean of the school, Love Liberty. And he had both, and you know, we spent 4 hours going through it, and he said, "Everything you've said is true. I can't find exception with anything." And you know, I went through Christmas and Easter and Sunday worship and Jesus and Christ and the Trinity and church and Lord and Yahweh's name, Yosha's name. I went through it all, and you know, everything you say is true.
So every seminary teaches is true.
Yeah, well, he knew it was all true. I mean, he was.
Well, no, he had to know that from somewhere. So did he find it somewhere? So everybody knows.
He has these huge Easter celebrations and these huge Christmas pageants.
Yeah.
You know, and he said, "Yeah, okay, yeah, everything you're saying is true." But he was so into it, he had built his whole reputation on it. He built his whole empire on it. Mm-hmm. You know, he was one of the most respected people in America. And best known people in America, and he built everything on it. Now he's a really nice man. He was really kind to people. He has big smile, big heart, but admitted that everything that he was saying was untrue, and the motivation was the checks in the mail. It's just so why people continue to do that, I don't know. But it's very hard to let go of religion.
They got to be agnostic. They have to be agnostic. You couldn't.
They have to not believe it.
You have to be an agnostic because you couldn't believe. You couldn't really know that one day, especially for a national deceiver. Because
did you hear what Boehner said about Boehner resigned today? Good riddance. But Boehner resigned today, and he was all in tears, and he was talking about his wonderful experience.
That
he's a Roman Catholic with the Pope.
Right, baby.
And my view is, if you want to go and be religious, go do it on your own time. Don't do it as a leader of the house. Yeah, but he said that when he was with the Pope, the thing the Pope asked him to do was to pray for him. Now, I'm going to tell you, if you are really buying into who you are and what your role is supposed to be, you don't ask somebody to pray for you. You're supposed to be the direct conduit. You're supposed to be the person who God talks to.
You're the baker, man.
You're the baker, man. You don't say, pray for me. No. But that talk about stunning admission of that you know the truth.
Now, people don't even put that together. Put it together.
I just think
it's astounding that Falwell, who said that to you, he must have been either atheist or agnostic. I mean, you would have to know if Yahweh's words were true, and he acknowledged what you said was true.
I don't think he was either of those things. I think what he was is that he had bought into the God created in the image of man.
So he had just... He was going to be forgiven for being an outright liar.
He had bought into God being Jesus Christ. He knew it was wrong. He knew it wasn't justifiable. So he wasn't an atheist. It's just that his religion was based on a false god.
Yeah, but, okay. All right. Well, I mean, this is a window.
I know. If you're asking me, why would a rational person do that?
You can't. You can't.
I am not going to give you an answer. There is no answer to that. I'm not going to give you one. Okay, if asked, what about, and this is really the thing that is really just stunning here. If asked, what about those wounded by your hand, by your doing? You know, it's like if I were to ask, what about those who's been injured, afflicted around you by your doing, your hand?
Yeah.
And he will say, their crippling afflictions came by way of my lover's house.
And we know what that house is.
They are burned by the sun and blinded.
Yes, they are.
Against the Most High Shepherd, against the Most High's mighty individual, who is closely related to and associated with me, Yahweh, of the Shabbat, prophetically declares Yahweh. Wow. So he says that he did it on behalf of his
religious
house. What did he love? He loved his religion.
Yeah.
And what was his religion based on? The sun.
Sun worship. And they were burned and blinded by the sun. Yeah.
Christianity is nothing but another manifestation of sun worship.
Yep. That's, we all know that. You know, with what we know, and we walk by these pagan, or drive by these pagan houses of
and there's sun god churches, right?
Yeah.
There's sun god imagery everywhere with their steeples and crosses.
Right. And we know that they're in there praying for Satan. We can show it to them. See on media like I'm on, where you're showing this stuff to them 150 times a day, okay? And it's in your face. I mean, I don't know how you could read this and walk away and feel good about what you're bowing to a cross.
I think they're genuinely in love with a false god. You can think your way to the real God, or you can feel your way to a false god. They're in love with a false god. That's just it. You know, somebody wrote me, I think it was Jim Doyle, who listens to this program, who was the original foreman of the administrator of the Yada Yada Forum. And he was talking about how people did not understand why it was that Catholicism could be so flexible and incorporate everybody, have something for everybody. And he says, I guess it reveals the nature of religion. You know, it's people believe they don't think. And you think about religion, isn't it comprised of make-believe? Isn't the whole concept of belief make-believe? And isn't make-believe the ultimate in pretend?
Mm-hmm. When you wish upon a star.
Right. So they are in love. It's just that that's why Yahweh used the term infidelity. That's why he called the Ephraim unfaithful. That's why he referred to them as committing adultery. They're in love. It's just that they're in love with a prostitute, with a whore. That's why he calls the Roman Catholic Church married to Baal, Jezebel. So they're in love. You look at the face of it. They talk to so many people to watch the Pope go by, and they're in love. They're emotionally, born to tears and to joy and to exuberance. They're in love. They're just in love.
The young lady, the lady that joined us this week, when she was 22, she went to the Vatican. Catholic, grew up Catholic, and she went to the Vatican, and the Pope was coming by. And she looked at the row of all of them just crying and screaming and wanting to kiss his ring. And she looked at it, and it got her so disgusted, she gave up being a Catholic on the spot and went home.
Yeah. In the chat room, just says Catholic equals universal. It was the universal amalgamation of all non religions that created Roman Catholicism. It's a universal amalgamation of all of Babylon's lies.
Everything but the truth.
Catholicism. Everything but the truth. So,
well, but see, that's a confirmation of the truth. That's the problem. that's exactly what Yahweh says is going to happen.
Yes.
I mean, you know, you talk about these people knowing a lot of things but understanding almost nothing. Well, I don't know how much they know, and I certainly realize they don't understand. This is everything that we just, that you two just went over, is a complete confirmation of Yahweh's words. A complete confirmation of it.
Right. Yes, from the beginning.
I guess he was just lucky.
He knew the future. It shall come to exist in the whole of the land, prophetically predicts Yahweh. 2/3 shall be cut off and die, and 1/3 shall be spared. I think the audience, says he's talking about the land. Anytime that Yahweh references the land, he's talking about Yisrael. So I think the population of the world as a whole, which is going to go into the tribulation at about 7 billion, I think we're going to lose, somewhere. We know half are gone just in two wars, a quarter and then a third of the remaining, which is half. And then we know that it really gets nasty from that point on. So, you can do some extrapolation, and you can say that it's somewhere between 3/4 and maybe 90% of the world's population as a whole is exterminated, killed by fellow man.
Mm-hmm.
But here now he's talking about the land. He's not talking about Goyim Nation. Well, this is the Eretz. So, and it shall come to exist in the whole of the land, prophetically declares Yahweh, that 2/3 shall be cut off, and 1/3 shall be spared. So whatever number of Yehudim come into the tribulation, which could be 15 billion, maybe even 20 billion, that 1/3 of those have a chance of being spared at the end, and 2/3 can die. Now, that may be way too optimistic.
Million.
15, if I said, if I meant 15
million.
Yeah, 15 million. So it could be somewhere between 15 and 20 million Jews that would come into the tribulation with the 2/3 of them dying. Now, that's the most optimistic way to look at this. This could also be that he's talking about everything he's been focusing on here is right at the end of the tribulation.
And that's always happening in Jerusalem, in the city.
Right.
So
this is in the land of Yisrael, and he's talking about, I said, only 1/3 of those who are alive at this point are going to be spared. So since the whole world for the previous 18 years has gradually turned more and more anti-Semitic, and since they're at this point, we've already dealt with the horror of the Magog War.
Which was nuclear.
Yeah, so at this point, the number of surviving Yehudim may be very small, and that only 1/3 of those who remain are going to be receptive. You know, like I said, I think we've all benefited from the spirit of acceptance, and that we responded to it. I think what he's saying is, I'm going to pour it out, but 2 out of 3 are still going to reject it.
Yeah, well, yeah, you got free will. You got free will, no matter what.
So we ought to be careful here in coming up with numbers. The percentages we can take to the bank, but with numbers, because we don't know. Is he telling us that 2/3 are going to reject his offer after he has poured out the spirit of acceptance, after the Magog War, after this terrible flood of Muslims into Israel, and all of Israel has been abandoned? You know, at that point, there may only be, hundreds of thousands.
Well, I think you're into that, and I'm going to tell you why, because we can go right back to what's written, and it's, thousands.
Yeah, I'm thinking the same thing. Yeah.
You can't be in millions here.
You've got to be careful here as to how many people he's talking about here, because
the return, they're breaking into the north wall and they're raping the women and screaming Allah.
Yes.
I mean, we know that. That's
right,
what it says.
Yes,
you got people being killed right up to the you know, the second, the momentum.
So Yahweh was saying, I'm going to return to this one-third. So this one-third is one-third of those who made it to the day of his return. This is, I think this is 7 years into the tribulation.
Well, yeah, then he's going to test them in fire. They, I mean, they get tested some more.
Right.
I mean,
so this is I think, a very small number that he is returning to. In the fire, I shall refine them as one refines gold. And they will summon my personal and proper name, and I will answer them. So of the of those that exist, I'm going to just throw out a number for pretending. I'm being totally speculative here. Let's just say that there are a million left at this point.
Okay.
Let's just extrapolate. There's a million left at this point. And he's going to pour out the spirit of acceptance at this point, give them every opportunity. They have no one to rely on but him. Everything around them is death and destruction. They have seen they're seeing their brethren annihilated. And at this point, even having gone through that crucible of fire and testing, two-thirds are still stiff-necked and hard-headed and rejected.
Unbelievable.
One-third. But the one-third of the remnant is going to accept him. And you know, that's good enough for you.
Yeah.
It's not, never been in the numbers. That's good enough for you.
Well, it is good enough because that means he kept his promise. And that's
right.
What I think.
That's what I think
Ha Satan's total attack on the Jews has always been about. To me, it's always just another confirmation of Yahweh's words, because the only interest he has in killing Yehudim, from what I can tell, is so Yahweh couldn't keep his promise. I mean, that's it. That's what I think.
We ought not look at this as a human family. If I had a human family and there were 12 of my human family, and 8 of them died, and 4 of them survived, I would be both joyous of the 4, and I would be devastated at the 8 who died. But in this particular case, let's say there's 12, the 8 who die were never part of the family. They were never alive to me. So I haven't lost anything. So from Yahweh's perspective, the four that he is returning on behalf of and returning to are just pure joy. This is a joy.
Can I say something?
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. When you were reading my personal and proper name, Terry went to the grocery store this afternoon.
Uh-huh.
The lady comes up to her in the grocery store and says, I want to talk to you about God. And she says, okay, what's his name? I'm paraphrasing because I'm going to tell the story wrong. She'll correct me later. But basically, you know, she said, what's his name? And she said, Jehovah. And he said, well, there's no J in Hebrew. She said, well, it doesn't matter. People don't pronounce my name.
Now, why would you talk to God in Hebrew?
What does that just say right there? My personal and proper name.
Right. Yeah,
why should you do it? I'm sorry.
Yeah, my first. And by the way, he says it right there. And I will say, you are my people, and they will say, Yahweh is our God.
Yahweh is our God.
Did they say Jehovah is our God?
No.
Did they say Jesus is our God? They say the Lord is our God. No, they're gonna know Yahweh is our God, and that is the defining factor that terms that one third that is saved.
Yeah, that's how unimportant his name is. And by the way, Hova means bringer of ruin. That's what it means, bringer of ruin.
But think about it for a moment. You've got one-third that are spared.
Yeah.
And the one thing that is unique about them, the one thing that God says that is the basis of them being spared, is that they will call out my personal and proper name. And when I say, you are my children, they will say, Yahweh
is
our God.
Our God. While she was doing that, I was looking up at home, John 3:18. Everybody knows 3:16, and I never looked up 3:18. And I went through the Greek, and here what it says is he says that, you know, let me read it to you. And this is kind of funny. Now this is all English, and 26 editions all say exactly the same thing. So this is not like one thing. It says, he that believeth in him is not condemned, but he that believeth not is condemned already or judged, because he hath not believed in the name of the only begotten Son of God. So by essence, in essence, you're saying that they will be saved because they know his name.
Right.
What are the Christians? This is a Christian Bible now.
What are they calling it?
Jesus
Christ. Well, they call it.
You're dead. Well, you're dead by your own pronouncement.
Right.
By your own.
Yeah, because you don't know the personal property.
You don't know his name, so it's cash.
No, and these individuals are saved because they know his name. Is Yahweh going to actually determine people's eternal salvation based upon them knowing and using his name?
You got to know him. You got to know his name to know him.
The answer is yes. The answer is yes.
But look at his name.
It's that simple. Why would he say? Why would he make the third statement? He actually showed that the belittlement, the negating of my name, is unforgivable.
Unforgivable.
All right. So, religions are promoted. Islam exists today. Christianity exists today for a singular reason, and that is that Yahweh's name was removed from his testimony and from our lips. And, by the way, Christianity and Islam are going to be obliterated, and Yahweh's name is going to return to our lips. And I will say, you are my people, you are my family. And they will say, Yahweh is our God. Behold, Yahweh's day of return is coming. Pay attention. A day is coming to approach Yahweh. And then, that which is good and valuable will be apportioned and assigned in your midst. You know, I was, when I first did this, I was saying, oh my goodness, you know, the Muslims have raped Israel and it's just going to be reassigned. And no, that's not what he's talking about. Pay attention. The day is coming that we are going to be able to approach Yahweh. And then that which is good and valuable, what's good and valuable? Being enriched, being enlightened, being made immortal, being adopted into his family. That's what's good. That's what's valuable. And it is going to be apportioned. We're with the inheritance of the covenant, we are apportioned our inheritance. This is the day that Yahweh's returning. That's what he's talking. This is that time. And if you are one of those that says Yahweh is our God, then you are one of those that is going to be enriched. And I will gather all the people from different races and places to Jerusalem for the battle. The city will be seized. The family and their houses shall be plundered, and the women will be raped. Half of the inhabitants of the city shall leave as exiles, and the remainder of the people shall not be cut off or banished from the city. So, when we have to be a little careful here, yeah, but what Yahweh is essentially saying is that it's time to bring this all to a head. God doesn't intervene in human affairs very often. He very, very seldom intervenes in free will. But there comes a time when he's got on his calendar to bring it all to a close. He wants to have a final day of accounting. Are you with me or against me? And if you're against me, come on, let's bring the fight. That's what I think is happening here. I don't want any fence setters. No more la 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 la. You're either with me or against me. Let's have it out. And
we're about to get to the part where he comes forth against the Gentiles, okay, and fights in their midst, and then they know they're in deep trouble. But right. In Matanyah, you point out, you get so many people that they claim that now they're being called back, they're the real family, and what he's doing is calling people actually back from the four corners of the universe. You recall that?
Right. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah.
And but they actually engage in the fight too, don't they? They act like torches going through corn stalks or something to that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think what Yahweh's doing here is to judge people, to deal with them, to eliminate the host of religion. He's just bringing everybody to him. He says, there's no reason for me to go out to everybody else. I'm just going to bring them all to this place of rendezvous, and we're just going to have it out. See if you can come against. See how well your arguments against me are going to work.
Yeah, it's not going to work out very well, obviously, for them.
So that's it. We're going to gather them all together, and this is what's going to happen. Then Yahweh will come forth to oppose the Gentiles, engaging in battle in that day himself in their midst. So it's pretty hard to imagine that the promises of that Yahweh made to the descendants of Abraham, to Yisrael, to Yahudah, were inherited by, via replacement theology, the Gentile church. When Yahweh was saying, no, that day I brought them all here, and then I'm going to come out against you. I'm going to engage in battle myself in your midst in opposition to you, to oppose you. So much for replacement theology. He is pouring out a spirit of acceptance and saving Yisrael and Yahudah, and he is himself engaging in battle to oppose the Gentiles. Pretty stout stuff.
Great.
On that day, he will present himself, his feet standing upon the Mount of Olives, which relationally faces Jerusalem on the east. Wow. So, do you need Yosha's comments in Revelation that I'm going to return to the Mount of Olives? You're going to see me return just as I have left?
No.
No, it's just simply quoting Zechariah. And doesn't he make that statement in Matanya 23 during the Olivet Discourse?
Mm-hmm.
So, when in Matthew 23, when he says, when it's twisted that it's the day no one knows, only the Father, then ought we also, shouldn't we look to Zechariah to find out what actually it says in Zechariah that he was quoting? And we find right here in this text that it was the one day that is known to Yahweh, the only day, the essential day known to Yahweh that he has chosen to return. Yom Kippur.
Yeah.
What does he say of Yom Kippur? It's the essential day.
Essentially.
Right. So he's going to come forth and he's going to return right to the Mount of Olives. And when he does, the Mount of Olives is going to be split in two, right in the middle, from the east gate to the sea, exerting a great force. Half of the mountain will be felt moving southward and half will move to the north, creating a great... That valley is going to be this conduit for cleansing, for wiping away. You know, he talks about this flood of waters that's just going to wipe out all of that which has been in opposition to him. The earth is going to swallow up all of the mung, all of the... I mean, if you were to go from the east gate right to the sea, from the Mount of Olives, you know the first thing that's going to be swallowed in that gorge? The Dome of the Hopi Prince.
Oh, yeah.
Come on. I mean, that really is. That's the first building. That's the first building swallowed. It's the Dome of the Rock. Yeah. But I've been on the Mount of Olives. You look from the Mount of Olives due west, which is, he said, where this chasm is going to open up. From the Mount of Olives due west, right through the east gate, guess what you got? First thing gone is the Dome of the Hopi Prince, the Dome of the Rock, Shrine of the Rock, and then Alaska Mosque. They're gone. Over. But you know, it's just north of there at the highest peak of Mount Moriah. As you go out the Damascus Gate, you're going out north of all of that. And so that's where the new this new temple is going to be built, is on the top of Mount Moriah, where the empty tomb is, right above where the Ark of the Covenant sits today.
Yeah. Where does the beast set himself up in this thing to be worshipped? Where is that? Is that?
Yeah, you know, I think...
Is that in some new temple they build, or what?
To me, yeah, I mean, talking about the temple.
Yeah, you know, I don't know for certain whether or not they're going to do the Hadrian. I mean, that's what Hadrian, you know. If you want to have the...
Would be kind of perfect.
Yeah, if you want to have the most perfect depiction of the Torahless one, it's Hadrian. And so what did Hadrian want to do? He wanted to build a temple to himself with a statue of himself right in the middle of the Temple Mount. That's what he was going to do. And then he was going to have all these roads that were going to come right to him, and he was going to make it this great retreat for the military. And so wouldn't you expect the Torahless one, who will be modeled exactly after Hadrian, to do the exact same thing?
Sure, I would. Yes, I would.
Yeah. So I'm just wondering
if the Jewish leadership today is going to help them build it.
Where is the most demonic religious shrine on earth?
It'd be in Yisrael. It'd be the Dome of the Rock.
Dome of the Rock. Yeah.
Yeah.
In fact, if you were to ask people to show me the holiest place on earth, most people would send you a picture of the Temple Mount centered on the Dome of the Rock. First thing gone. I think that's where
shows you what Yahweh thinks of the term holy. That's for sure.
Yeah, sure does. From the Mount of Olives, he escaped to safety through my mountain valley. For indeed, the mountain valley will reach the place where you'll be set apart and take away. Depart in haste, similarly to how you fled from the presence of the earthquake in the days of King Uzziah. You know, of Yehuda. There are these earthquakes that are specifically depicted in Revelation. Well, all those earthquakes are the ones that are depicted here. This is an earthquake that causes this. And it's the same exact earthquake that's depicted in the midst of Revelation when he comes. And it's interesting that it's an earthquake because when his body relinquished the soul so that the soul could go to Sheol and so that the blood of the sacrificial lamb could be sprinkled on the mercy seat of the covenant, wasn't there an earthquake?
Mm-hmm.
And didn't that earthquake tear the very veil of the temple, separating the most set apart where the Ark of the Covenant was supposed to be placed?
That's what it says.
Yeah, that's what it says. We've got another earthquake, which means the earthquake of Uzziah, of Uzziah, is prophetic. And Yahweh, my God, will return. And all of those who are set apart with you. Oh, that's the, you know, when he says, and those who are going to be pulled from the four corners of the heavens, as you just mentioned, Larry, that's us.
Yeah.
So Yahweh's going to return. And all of those who are set apart, Kodesh, are going
to
return.
Yeah, and we get to help engage in that battle, not just watch it. That's what it looked like to me. Sure.
Yeah, I think so. I think we at that point have the opportunity of doing whatever Yahweh wants us to do. You know, we can engage in, you know, and I'm going to tell you that I'm genuinely a non-violent sort of a guy, but I would take a great pleasure in obliterating religious and military and political leaders who've led so many astray, who are such a cancer.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah, I take great pleasure in it.
I'm sure you would. They'd probably give you a lawnmower.
Everybody in religious garb gone.
I just would.
I find it pleasurable.
I'm going to find pleasurable is laughing at them. Because I'm going to laugh at them. I can tell you that right now.
Oh, yeah. There's some that I would laugh at. You were played for a fool. You had to be a fool to be played for a fool. I would laugh at. But there's others that, man, I just loathe.
And just ooze with evil.
Yeah, I just loathe.
The upper leadership of all these outfits are evil. I mean, they're seriously. They know what they're doing to people.
They're making merchandise out of men. And he will send forth his messengers with a great trumpet, and they will gather together his chosen from the winds, from one end of the heavens to the other extreme.
And that's important to point out. They're coming from the universe. They're not coming from the four corners of the earth.
Right. So he's citing Matthew 24.
Sure.
And each of these next statements, and we made it halfway through this text. So if it's all right, what I'd like to do is next week.
There.
Yeah, is to make it through more of this. Because I think it's important to see the fulfillment of Yom Kippurim, what's going to happen on this day, and how it's going to play out, and how the Olivet Discourse. Because I think there is one book in the witness writings. That's really valuable. And this is we spend a lot of time on Matanyah.
And that's just because they couldn't corrupt it because it was there was actually Hebrew papyrus around that they couldn't corrupt.
Right.
They do corrupt it as it goes on, but when you look at the oldest parchments,
they didn't even like it because they couldn't read Hebrew. So the bookend, you know, the first great speech is to the world, and it's the Sermon on the Mount. The last great speech is to those who learn from him, to his disciples, and it's the Olivet Discourse. So this is the basis of the Olivet Discourse, is Zechariah. So let's just continue with it next week.
Okay.
I think I'll be
and I'd like to have a little discourse here, just a little bit. Go ahead.
Can I just want to inform you guys so that you know, and then we'll do that. My first grandchild is going to be born no later than Tuesday of next week. She is my daughter-in-law. He is past due, but her OBGYN said they're going to evict my daughter-in-law from her womb no later than 1 week past due, which will be sometime Tuesday of next week. I have promised that I would fly down to pick up my youngest son in Texas and bring him back to enjoy being an uncle for the first time, which would mean I'd have to fly down to pick him up on a Friday afternoon and evening, and then I would return him on a Sunday to be able to accomplish that. And I was originally planning on doing it the first weekend that she was here, that her granddaughter, his, would be his niece. But I think I'm going to do it after she's been here for a better part of 2 weeks. I think I'm going to be here next week, and I won't be here the week after. Okay. My one excuse for missing the program is celebrating.
That's a good one.
It's a good one.
I don't mind doing some shows as long as I can, tape them. For any amount of them, it doesn't matter. I'll do them with Scott, Kirk, or by myself.
Oh, no, I'll make the Shattering Myth shows, although I'm hopeful that I'm going to miss some in December, because I'm going on a cruise with my wife celebrating a kind of reenactment of our honeymoon 30 years later.
Well, I really would enjoy doing a few shows.
Scott said he would love to do that with you, and is hoping that you'll do that, and that Kirk, you'll do some shows.
I'll call him.
We'll have some live material for it, because I'm going to be gone the second and third week of December. But in this, I'm just talking about the Shabbat show on Friday. Mm-hmm. I'll be able to do the Shattering Myths, but I won't be able to do the Shabbat.
Next Saturday, are we talking, or the week after?
No, I think it'll be Shabbat a week from this coming Friday. So I'll be here. But I won't be here next week.
Yeah, and I have no problem. I do have a problem opening up. I'm technologically retarded. If they've changed much. I mean, can I still pull them up the same way and do them?
Yeah, it appears to me that they have they've gone back to a format now that's very similar to the old one.
Okay, well, we can, Kirk and I can. I'm not going to speak for you, Kirk. But
yeah, I can't even run Facebook. We're going to have to get off Facebook.
What we'll do, though, is by email, I'll send you the link that I use, and then I can show you how I bring it up, but it's not difficult. And by that time, 2 weeks from now, my guess is we'll have JB, who is pretty competent in all this. JB will be able to get us done.
Really? I've known people I knew a guy that had to have a shoulder reconstruction because he got shot, and I'm telling you, it took more than a couple of weeks, and he didn't have a broken leg. Well, maybe they have
answers. Yeah, he's been through this now. It's been, 2.5 weeks already. So
that's not long.
That'll be another 2 weeks. But it'll be, is he going to be healed? No. But is he going to be in good enough shape that he can participate in the program? Probably.
Yeah, okay, that'd be beautiful.
Terrific.
Yeah, that means I can be lazy. Yeah, that's lovely.
So I'm hopeful that's the case. All right, you said you wanted to share something before we...
The song, Andy Williams.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I want you to think about this one, okay? You won't have to think much, but just think about this. What do you think, man?
Oh, my.
The spider references are painful.
Yeah.
Well, you don't like snakes either, see? You know, we know who they are.
How are you doing, by the way? On your, Yato, how are you doing on your...
I had a little bit of a setback today, but overall, pretty good. But we're having a real tough time eradicating these spiders here. We did try our best to commit an act of mass murder and brought in an exterminating team to spray inside and outside the house, and I think we made a dent. But, man, this has been Spiderville. And so
that bad?
At it. Yeah, it's really been bad. Yeah.
What kind of spider bit you?
A
brown recluse?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
You know something? Did you know what it was when it hit you?
My wife did. I didn't. The reality is that because she did, she took me to the hospital emergency room. The nurse immediately recognized it. The doctor came in immediately after the nurse diagnosed it. And then there is an antibiotic specifically designed to counteract it. And they say if you get it within an hour of the bite, you'll have no ill effects. And if you don't take it within a day of the bite, you'll lose your leg or an arm.
Yeah, typically, you know, people don't know what those bites look like, and typically people don't even know what a brown recluse looks like. And I'll tell you,
it's an ordinary-looking spider.
Yeah, I know. And I knew a girl that got bit by one in a park, and thankfully, because 12 hours into it, they didn't know really what was going on, but a nurse had seen a brown recluse bite, and it was the nurse that figured it out, but nobody else could. So that's why I asked, did you know what it was?
Yeah.
Obviously,
the clue was that within 15 minutes of the bite, I had a 10-inch diameter bright red welt on my leg. You know, 10 inches in diameter.
Wow,
man. Yeah, it starts eating the skin. You know what it does. I mean, it's a real bad bite.
Yeah,
but, you know, I think you might want to consider, I don't like spiders. Spiders are great.
So 1.5 billion Muslims can't take you off the air, and 2.5 billion Christians can't take you off the air.
But
that damn little Yankee spider. I want you to roll that next time you run around your garage. I want you to have a rolled up newspaper in your hand constantly.
It bit me 5 minutes before showtime. So it was right there at it, and so I was going to come down and do the show, and then try to deal with it. And my wife says, "No, you're not.
No.
You've got your producer's cell phone number. You're going to call him right now. He's going to do a rerun, and we're going to the hospital."
Yeah, good for her.
Yeah, good for her. She did the right
thing. Can I mention one quick thing, and then I'll let you go home? I was fascinated with when I called IQ.
Yeah,
I was really curious about what he thought about when the Muslims would start acting up after they got there, both Europe and there. And there are no coincidences, as Terry said. You know, I was fascinated. He said, in about 10 years, and that's going to bring us to 2025. He's got his finger on the pulse.
Exactly. He does. Yeah, I think he is really, really making progress towards the covenant. I really do. He is such a bright, discerning, rational man.
And brave.
So,
he's a tough guy.
Oh, yeah, brave. He's a tough dude, man. Yeah, when it comes to people that I respect, he's in my top 10 list for sure. He's the only person outside of the covenant that's in my top 10 list for just being a man that grabs your attention and earns your respect. Yeah, he's a man with tremendous courage.
Now, who is that? I'm sorry.
IQ Al-Rasuli.
Well, I think IQ's walking into the family here.
I think he is, too.
Well, you know, my hat's off to you. You know, it's a thing you do day after day. It's just straightforward. You know, at a certain point, a guy like IQ that appreciates reality, when he starts seeing things, you know, like relativity and this and that, at some point, you can just not deny it anymore. You got to wait a minute.
Thing that recently just got him is this realization that there's no way that a God is worth knowing that would want to be worshipped. And when he said today, he says, nowhere in the Torah does God ask you to bow down to him, to worship him, or to pray to him. He says, and he said, I would not want to be around a God that would want any of those things. That kind of God would be repulsive.
Yeah. One of my most powerful notes goes into, you know, how Yahweh does not want to be praised. There's no
right.
prayer in the Torah, and that he calls bowing a curse. And I put, you know, there's 5-6 passages straight up to where he just calls bowing just loathsome, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And people respond to that. You know, they begin to understand, well, we're not just having a name here. We're walking away from religion. We're walking out of Babylon.
Yeah. And so I think it started to resonate, at least with me, and I think with others like IQ, is when you put them in the role. You know, it's like Yahweh would love to tell stories of that help you understand a certain perspective. Put somebody in a role where they create a robot, and they program the robot to tell them all day long, every day, how wonderful they are. And talk about the sickness of doing that and how long you could tolerate it before you were just repulsed by it. And how degrading that would be to yourself, and what it would say about you if you continued to have this robot tell you you're wonderful. You'd be a sicko. And when you tell people that, so how would the creator of the universe want that? And then all of a sudden it just, the lights up, of course, then he doesn't want to be bowed down to him. He doesn't want to be prayed to. He doesn't want to be lifted up in praise or worship. Of course not. So I think that perspective really helps people.
Well, I do something similar. I just say, what if you walked into your home and your children were on their knees and saying, oh, I praise you, oh, I love you, and just kind of get you a glass of tea. Yes, Master, Father, please, thank you. And all this nonsense. People don't like being put in submission. People want to feel special. I mean, they really do. And at least feel good that people like them, but they don't want phony nonsense. You know, one of the great
respect
things
is a wonderful thing. Reverence is a wonderful thing.
Mm-hmm.
Love is a wonderful thing. Friendship is
phoniness
a wonderful
is not. Phoniness is hallmark greeting moments. Every time somebody talks to me and say they had a grin plastered on their face, they call that inappropriate affect in psychological community, I think.
Yeah, that was what the Pope had with almost everything he said. He had that grin that I know what I'm saying is not true, but they're lapping it up like it was cool.
Yeah, and Obama does the same thing. They all do it.
Yeah, George Bush did it all the time.
Sure. But I just think that, you know, I've used that on a couple people lately about the praise thing. Oh, I praise you. Oh, I praise you. I said I couldn't stand it for an hour, much less an eternity. How would you feel about it? And they laugh and they go, yeah, you're right. Yeah, it's goofy. And everybody knows it's fraudulent. It's fraudulent.
Of course.
It's just fraudulent. You know, and who would want to be around people committing fraud against them all day? You know, one of the great things that happened to me, you know, my wife generally placates me during the Moed Mikra.
Uh-huh.
And she's happy to go make a dinner, and she thinks you need a dinner, and that's what it is. And it was great. It was a feast, you know. And finally, I just said to Yalda, I said, look, do me a favor, will you? Go find something to do.
Yeah.
You know, I'd rather do this alone. And I did.
Right.
You know, I mean, I'm sorry to be saying this. It's the truth.
Mm-hmm.
I felt better about doing this completely alone rather than with somebody placating me and asking stupid questions, the same ones every time.
Yeah.
I said, that's it.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that might sound a little rough, but that's just the way it was, you know?
It's perspective. Don't blow smoke at me. Don't pretend.
Yeah, I don't need anybody to placate me about the Moed Mikra. You know, exactly. If you're not here to learn it, if you're not here for the purposes of understanding, then there's no point to you doing it. And so I just shared my Kapurim with, you know, the people in UT and FB.
Right.
Making notes and reading them.
When we're going to do it in eternity. It's the same group of people we're going to be doing it with and the same group of people we won't be doing it with. The great divide. You know, you're in eternity, there won't be anyone who is
right on the same page.
Yeah, no one on the same page. Yeah, the page will actually be inside of us, so we'll all be on it.
But even that, exactly. I'm just saying the same more about it. It just kind of felt good just to put it out there.
That's that whole idea of him obliterating all traces of religion. And so
that's great.
Only him and family left, and no lies and no confusion and no corruption. That's going to feel good.
Okay, Grandpa.
Okay, yeah. This next time we talk, I will be a grandpa. Except for Kirk, next time I talk with you, I won't be.
Well, I'll probably talk at you Monday.
Okay, that's right. I don't mind being a grandpa. In fact, I'm looking forward to it.
All righty, buddy.
All right.
We'll see y'all later. Larry, good talk to you.
Good night.
Good night.